Before we get started with today's show, I want to remind you about another great ESPN podcast, SV Pod. Scott gets some of the best guests out there. In his first episode last week, he had Matthew McConaughey, Tiger Woods, Big Cat, and Tony Kornheiser to chat about his big move to D.C. Be sure to check it out. You can download and subscribe to SV Pod now, as well as the right time, wherever you get your podcast. 2020 is going to be the year you get it together, right? Join that gym, start that diet. Nah. But how about getting out of that job and into a career in information technology? There are millions of unfilled cybersecurity positions in the U.S. right now, and My Computer Career is training people to help fill them. No IT experience or education? No problem. It's not rocket science. It's mycomputercareer.edu. Go to mycomputercareer.edu and take the free career evaluation today. You could start your new life as an information technology professional in months, not years. Attend classes on campus or live online just a few times a week to get what you'll need to start your new career. More than just a school, My Computer Career helps you get into the industry by working with hundreds of employers that hire our students. My Computer Career is nationally accredited and financial aid is available for those who qualify, including the GI Bill. Classes start soon, so make new year, new career your resolution and take the free computer evaluation today at mycomputercareer.edu. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. On this episode of The Right Time, we're going to talk about what happened with the 49ers and the Packers. We're going to talk about what happened with Bronny James. But first, I've learned my lesson over time. I am not much of an overreactor. I am not the he's going to be great off the rip type, right? I am now settled into the space when we talk about players, particularly in football. He's going to be good, a good prospect, right? Like, I'm not sending people off to the moon in that way anymore. And the answer for why is very simple. Robert Griffin, man, after that happened, like, I think it's hard for people to remember that 2012 Robert Griffin season was one of the best seasons we've ever seen a rookie have. Ever. And after it become clear that it just wasn't going to happen for him, I was still like, hey, man, y'all got to keep playing that dude because I've seen what the ceiling is and you got to give a chance on this. And then that thing never happened. It never, ever did, man. Learned my lesson. Got a little skittish. I take my time on just about everybody and figuring out what it's going to be. You can get out here and be balling like Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson out here balling. And I'm like, well, we know for sure that he's a quarterback. I ain't willing to go so far, man. I'm sorry. I've been okey-doke by too many people in too many ways. Just try to play it cool, man. Just try to play it cool. Ain't no playing it cool with Mahomes. It's not there. Like, this is stunning. I watched Mahomes play in college when he was at Texas Tech, and you could see the high end of it, but you also see why it was that he wasn't the number one overall pick. Had a lot of things he needed to get cleaned up. It was mostly technical stuff, but also it didn't help then. This isn't entirely his fault, but them teams wasn't really winning no games, right? And that wasn't really such an encouraging thing about bringing him on. And then the Chiefs brought him on, and they made the smart play, sat him for a year, no rush. They had Alex Smith. Why not? And then they brought him in, and he started balling last year. And I was just like, hey, man, this is going. You know, and we see this often happen with young guys when they get started, but the league gets a chance to figure out a little bit more about what's going on, how the offense has changed, because he's the guy that's out there. You know, all them sorts of things. And I'm like, but look, don't you just so you know, the time is going to come where this is difficult, and when that time comes and it's difficult, everybody needs to be, like, rational about it. Understand that these are the ups and downs. These are the ebbs and flows of being a quarterback in the NFL. We saw Peyton Manning have downs in the beginning of his career. We saw how long it took for Drew Brees to get it right. Like, we see this happen, man, where guys, where they can come out here and they can ball at first, and then something happens, they have a bad year. And I'm like, look, y'all need to be careful. You know, you're a black dude, so as soon as the black dude starts slipping up, everybody just want to throw him out the window completely. I'm like, hey, man, don't just be ready for when he struggles a little bit, and let's handle it in the way that you should handle it. When the hell is that struggle going to happen? Because it don't look like it's coming no time soon. Like, this is a Jordan-like figure. I saw this. Did you see he has, like, in 4 playoff games in his career, he has 1,300 yards. I want to say 13 touchdowns and 0 interceptions.
It kind of looks like when a pro or like a former pro goes back to the playground?
Yes, dude, that throw that he made, was it, I guess it was the Watkins, where he's rolling left and then, you know, obviously those are his right hand, but he's rolling left and then it just hits him dead on a run and nobody's back there. And how's the ball going so far? And how are you doing this so easily? That throw in the corner, it wound up not counting, but I figured he was just throwing the ball away. The one where Kelce almost caught it and got 2 feet down in the corner, when it seemed obvious to everybody else that Mahomes is just trying to get rid of the ball. Like, this is different. So with Manning, for example, I found that when I watch Manning, you could tell enough in watching him that you could see just how much mastery and control he had over the total situation. Like, he was manipulating these things. He was making everything happen himself, and you wound up just being kind of blown away by basically the brain power that he was using. Because, I mean, while Manning looked the part, about 6'5", 6'6", big strong guy, the arm wasn't big and strong. Like, this isn't like a great level of athleticism that you're getting from him. Like, the thing that I always found most impressive, amazing, when I would watch Peyton Manning, is how well he carried out the play fake, no matter what. Like, his play, like, when he was making the play fake, it worked. But when he was handing the ball off, he did everything exactly the same, right? And like, like, those are the kinds of things that I looked at Peyton Manning, was like, wow, that guy's really good. And then with Tom Brady, it was just kind of the cold, ruthless efficiency of what he was doing. But you weren't really getting a lot of individual plays from Tom Brady that blew your mind. Like, Gabe, can you imagine ever going on YouTube and pulling up, like, a Tom Brady highlight reel?
You know what? When you put it that way, I cannot imagine thinking that. The only things that you would bring up would be like Brady holding a trophy and confetti falling down, him making a silly face.
Yeah, and I'm not saying he's not good. I'm just saying that it's not a jump off the screen kind of good, right? Like, it's an understanding of everything in total, but it's not like you're going to just be watching Tom Brady and be like, wow, look at that. You know, that's not really what it is. Mahomes jumps off the screen. And so let's take a guy like Watson, for example. Watson is a dude who jumps off the screen and you find yourself so impressed by the things that he can do individually. Mahomes is so much more talented than Deshaun Watson is. And Deshaun Watson is the guy whose college coach referred to him in Michael Jordan-like terms, and it turned out not to really be crazy, right? Like I say about Watson in that same draft, that Watson's going to be to Houston what Olajuwon was. And like, the greatest testament to how good Olajuwon was, nobody in Houston was upset that they did not take Michael Jordan in 1984 and said they took Olajuwon. Trubisky has proven to be like, what if Sam Bowie went number one? Like, that's what the situation looks like for him over there. But Watson, he's just not Mahomes. He's not that dude. Other than Aaron Rodgers, I'm trying to think of anybody that really fits this template in the way that Mahomes does. Like, just in terms of raw physical talent at quarterback, John Elway and Cam Newton are kind of like two gold standard type cats. Now, again, in terms of raw physical talent, you get a guy like Dante Culpepper would be somebody that you throw on that list, for example. But just raw physical talent, Elway and Cam Newton up to this point had really been like my two gold standard type of cats. Mahomes is out here making these like Aaron Rodgers throws, and he's of a similar level of athleticism as Rodgers. Like, I think Rodgers is probably a bit faster. I know you're not allowed to say things like that, but I think Rodgers is probably a bit faster. But I'm looking for the hole in Mahomes' game, man. I can't find it. Like, you got anything close to what you would say could be called a hole? I'll take suggestions from anybody on that, if you can figure out what the hole in his game is, because I don't see it. So then we put on top of that, they got him surrounded with these dudes that you can't do nothing with, right? Kelce has a tight end. The people who are there to check tight ends can't do nothing with him. Now, maybe you try to get yourself into one of them bright idea places where you're like, fine, I'll just put a corner on him. All right, so what you going to do with Tyreek Hill? Except I can't even be mad at you for taking the corner off of Tyreek Hill, because I don't know what corner can actually check him. Who's fast enough? Who can keep up with him? Okay, so those are your top two receiving threats. We're looking at Sammy Watkins as your third receiving threat? Like, Sammy Watkins? He's the other guy? Dude, what are you talking about? Now you add all that to having Mahomes out there. And Gabe, don't forget, they went and drafted Mecole Hardman because, I mean, this hasn't been explicitly stated, but it seemed like Tyreek Hill wasn't going to be able to play this year after we heard that tape. And so they were like, okay, we need to go get another super fast guy. So now they got two of them super fast guys. They had a play in that game against the Titans where they were running them twos next to each other, both going deep, and you got to figure out which one's going to go the right way. What you supposed to do? Like, what chance is there for anybody in that kind of setup? Like, the poor Tennessee Titans, man, bless their hearts, they got as far as they could. They about there running that high school offense, and they got this thing to where they was going. And when it was coming up, people are like, well, I don't think the Chiefs are going to be able to stop the Titans from running the ball. I'm like, dog, it don't matter if they stop the Titans from running the ball. You can't score enough points playing the way the Titans play to try to stop them. You just can't. It's not an option. You cannot get enough points on the board in order to keep up with a team that plays like this. And that's basically what happened. That was it. Damn, Texans got up 24-0. They did not have enough points to win that game. Didn't even come close. So what can you do? I got no answer, Gabe. You got anybody that you like, when you look at Mahomes, you're like, he reminds me of insert person here?
Michael Vick.
Except, like, what if Michael Vick was, like, a way better passer?
Who jumps off the highlight reel?
Yeah.
Who was the last QB to do that? You look up highlight videos of Vick.
Yeah.
That's what you do. When you compare the two and it's like, this guy can throw now, cancel Christmas now.
Yeah. Like, it's hard for a quarterback to jump off the screen really just as a passer. Like, I mean, I'm really going through my mind and thinking about who were just the exciting passers. Cause, I mean, Mahomes can move, but that's not really, like, if he couldn't, I don't know how much that would affect what it is that we're talking about here. And I mean, moves in terms of like run move, like he moving the pocket and stuff like that. But I'm just trying to think of guys, like when you watch them drop back and throw the ball, where you look at them and you're like, ooh, damn. Again, like Elway's in that category. Marino was, and the thing about Marino was it seemed impossible that anybody could throw the ball that quickly. It just seemed impossible that anybody could get the ball out of his hands as quickly as Marino did. Like, I remember there was a stretch. I can't remember how many games, but I remember there being a stretch where Marino had something like double-digit straight games without taking a sack. And that was largely just because of how quickly he got the ball out of his hands. Like, Cam was a guy who, in a lot of ways, jumped off the screen. But again, part of that was just, you know, him physically and his ability to run and what, you know, the role that he played in the run game that that team had. Past that, man, like Matthew Stafford has that big old giant arm, and we've been talking about that giant arm that he's got for so long. Like, the highlight that jumps to your mind out of Matthew Stafford's career is that time that he went over the goal line with the separated shoulder and they had him mic'd up. And I'm not saying this, I mean, I want to be clear, I'm not saying this at all to shade Matthew Stafford. I'm just saying how hard it is for a quarterback to really impress your eyeballs just by throwing the ball. Mahomes, it's a whole nother thing. Like, that pass I talked about where he threw to Watkins, where he rolled left and then threw it. Dog, he didn't even really have to do that. He did not have to do that at all. He had time to stop and plan and throw the ball, but he's like, why would I do that when I can do it just like this? Like, it works the exact same way. Like, in a lot of ways, Gabe, he feels to me like Mahomes is, like, you know, the mythical Josh Allen ceiling, where his talents lead him are very, very high. Like, Allen is obviously bigger than Mahomes did, but we're talking about arm strength, just the strength of a similar caliber. And I feel like the hope for Buffalo fans on Allen always is if he can figure out how to get that deep ball, if he can figure out how to connect on that deep ball, then it'll all come together. Mahomes has that high end that you're hoping for from Josh Allen, except we don't have the weaknesses. We don't have the holes. And then on top of that, he's out there with Andy Reid, and Andy Reid gonna figure out a way. And look, Andy Reid has been great with quarterbacks, right? Like, we have a great track record of him of what he does with the quarterbacks that he has. Think about this for a second with Andy Reid. Who's the best quarterback that Andy Reid had up until this point as a head coach? I think that we'd all agree that the answer was Donovan McNabb. Now, I understand a lot of you have lost your minds and don't understand just what a problem McNabb was at his best, but McNabb's the best quarterback that Andy Reid had to work with. So we're basically going from McNabb to a brief moment of Kevin Cobb to Michael Vick. Then he gets to Kansas City. We're talking about Alex Smith. And then we get to Patrick Mahomes. Dude, he ain't never had anything like this before. Like, McNabb is, I think he's going to ultimately go down as a Ring of Honor guy, not a Hall of Fame guy. I think you understand the distinction that I'm making there. He's a Ring of Honor guy, right? He's probably the best quarterback that the Eagles have had. They should be glad that they had him. They should treat him with all the love in the world. But I don't think he's a guy that should necessarily get into the Hall of Fame. Mahomes, like, this is a Hall of Famer. If they win the Super Bowl this year, I'm not sure what Mahomes will have to do after this to not be a Hall of Famer. If y'all talking about putting Eli Manning in on the strength of those two Super Bowls, then one Super Bowl and what we've seen from Mahomes in these last 2 years damn sure should be enough. That's hyperbole. Yes. Except no. Except yes, no. It's all right there in the same place. And here we are with this dude, a legitimate superstar who has shown himself to be a legitimate superstar in year three. I'm trying to think of the last guy who has like really and truly demonstrated himself to be a legitimate superstar by year three. I don't even think that that fits John Elway. We'll see what happens with Lamar Jackson next year. I do like to see guys put a season plus a season, right? So we'll see what happens with him. Roethlisberger wasn't a superstar. Like, he won a Super Bowl. The Steelers did with him in that second year he was in the league, but he wasn't like no legit superstar by year three. Peyton Manning, I think he had been really good in year two, and maybe somebody would put him in this category of guys who were superstars by year three. I think that's a little bit of a stretch. Tom Brady wasn't a superstar by year three. Like, who was a jump off the screen, this is a superstar in year three at quarterback? Aaron Rodgers, nah, because year three, I want to say, is Aaron hadn't even started by year three. Year four was the first time that he actually got onto the field. Like, we ain't had one of these before. We'll see how it goes. My guess is it's only going to get better. But enjoy it while it's here, man, because we got a Michael Jordan-like figure at quarterback, and it's fantastic to watch. How you feeling, Gabe? San Francisco 49ers, NFC champs, that's your squad.
Or are you ready to eat crow or not quite yet?
I mean, I was going to kind of get to that, but here you are trying to throw it like dead up in my face.
Just,
off the rip. Like, yo, I was going to ask you other questions. Like, you as a 49er fan, use some of your little expertise and background. Let me ask you what you think. I can't remember if I asked you this before. I'm going to ask you what I think. We're going to get to Jimmy. I'm going to ask you about this. Does this team feel in any way to you like that 2011 team?
In a lot of ways. In a lot of ways. And it, when I was watching, thinking about Jimmy G, the one thing that came to mind for me was you could swap out Jimmy G with Colin Kaepernick and this team would be better.
You could swap out Jimmy G with Nick Mullins and it would be the same.
Yeah.
Pablo got mad when I said that. But, I mean, and I understand why people think it sounds like I'm being extreme, but, yo, last year, that was Nick Mullins as a rookie. It would be safe to reasonably presume that there would be a measure of improvement that comes from all the time that he got last year. I mean, I feel like Nick Mullins can hand the ball off 8 times. I do. We're going to get back to Jimmy. Here's what I was saying about 2011. Not the same run game, but a similar type of run game, right? Like, I feel like the offense they were running in 2011 was kind of singular at that time, very much so in the way that this offense that Shanahan is running right now was there. You had a similar type of building action where they built up the talent, and then all of a sudden, boom, they were really, really good. Like, you didn't see it coming, and then boom, it happened. The difference, of course, is Shanahan's been there 3 years, and Harbaugh came in the first one to make it happen. A very similar physical type of defense that was able to get heat by rushing 4 people, because you got to remember that 11 team had Justin Smith and Alton Smith. And when Alton Smith looked like he was going to wind up in the Hall of Fame, I think he had, 14 sacks that rookie year or something like that. These teams, they hit. I guess, well, they don't let you hit like that no more. But that 2011 team, you remember when, what's his name? Dante Whitner took Pierre Thomas out at the goal line.
Oh, I remember that.
He was out cold before he hit the ground. I would just say this right fast. This isn't like our full topic, but this is a thought. We can get into right or wrong about this if, you know, at another day, but they basically eliminated the hard hitter out of football. Like, you ever notice they used to be back in the day, you'd see draft profiles, even Hall of Fame profiles, and you describe a guy like, whoa, man, that dude was a hard hitter. Can you name one guy in the league that you think of as a hard hitter?
No, and the thing about it is, too, is like growing up, those are some of my favorite guys.
Yeah.
Ed Reed, Sean Taylor.
Yeah.
Dante Whitner, too.
Yep.
I mean, Dante Hittner.
Hittner. That's exactly what I was thinking. It ain't even 10 years ago, Dante Whitner knocked that dude out cold on the goal line. That ain't happening no more, right? Like the hitting don't really work in the way that it once did. But clearly, Gabe, you want to talk about Jimmy G. You as Niners fan, what was your impression of Jimmy G's performance in the postseason?
It's a story of what he hasn't had to do, right? And the team is continuing to win.
I say yes and no. Now, let me ask you this, because I hear the argument. Jimmy Garoppolo threw 8 passes in the last game. I believe I added it up. I believe he has thrown 27 in those 2 games, I believe. 27 passes in those two games. If, let's just throw a name out there. Let's say their quarterback was Drew Brees. This version of Drew Brees, not the all-time great version of Drew Brees. Okay. In fact, you know what? Let's just to make the point, let's say it's the all-time great version of Drew Brees, right? 2009 level Drew Brees. If the 49ers were running the ball as well as they were against Green Bay, right? Because they ran it fairly well against Minnesota, but then you go look it up. I think the longest run was like 12 yards. If they run the ball as well as they did against Green Bay and 2009 Drew Brees is their quarterback, do you think that they only let him throw the ball 8 times because they don't need to pass? Because I don't think that's what would happen.
No.
Okay.
No.
So my point being, it worked out well that they did not need for Garoppolo to throw the ball. They also seem to not want to have him throw the ball unless absolutely necessary. They are, at least they have in this postseason, won in spite of Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't think this is anything extreme or me being some kind of hater or anything else like that. When Kirk Cousins had that game earlier this year where he threw the ball like 10 times, I said that the Vikings called that game as though they are afraid of their quarterback, and nobody thought I was tripping on that. Just because they were effective running the ball doesn't mean they're not afraid of their quarterback. And it also doesn't help, by the way, that at the end of the first half against Minnesota, Garoppolo threw that pick to Eric Kendricks. And let's not forget, he tried to throw a pick or two before that, right? He threw that pick to Eric Kendricks. He has thrown 12 passes in 6 quarters since then. 12 in 6 quarters since then. Can you win a Super Bowl with a quarterback that scares you as much as their quarterback obviously seems to scare them? Can you do that? Because look, if they can go out here and run for 300 yards against the Chiefs, then yeah, they can win the Super Bowl without throwing the ball. That just feels like a lot to ask of any team. Like what they did against Green Bay was very impressive, but it's fair to say that it was an outlier performance.
Man, it's a bummer. I'm going to have to delete this whole portion of the podcast. You just laid out the case for why Jimmy G's a fraud. I was hoping that he'd be able to like kind of get through this postseason so we could like maybe con somebody into trading for him in the offseason.
Well, hold on. Let's take another level of this though. This is why I think that you as Niners fans should be encouraged. You remember, I forget who it was. I think it was somebody at the Ringer had written that story about, it was about how basically the Rams should not have given Jared Goff that extension, and they had been the team to start the grand experiment to just basically get cheap young quarterbacks every year. Save on the cap, put their money in other places, just get a cheap young quarterback to run your system. And the thought at the time is that McVay had figured this thing out because, duh, Jared Goff could do it, right? And so McVay had figured this thing out, and they would be the ones to do it, and obviously they went and gave Jared Goff the money. In reality, it looks to me like Kyle Shanahan might be the guy who's capable of figuring this out. That whole offense is dudes. Those running backs are just dudes. Those receivers overwhelmingly are just dudes. The quarterback, he's just a dude. They look like a machine. Maybe when time's up on Jimmy's contract, they just go back to Nick Mullins. Why not? Like, he is more in line. He's better than Trent Dilfer. I want to say that. But he's more in line with Trent Dilfer, where people are like, well, Trent Dilfer was a game manager. No, Trent Dilfer was the turnover machine he always was. They were just like, damn, somebody got to throw the ball. And that seems to be the place that they're in with Garoppolo. And I don't know why people are so insistent in trying to make Garoppolo out to be this winner or anything else. No, man, they're winning in spite of him. And good for them for the fact that they're able to do it. And good for him, by the way, that he had a couple moments during the regular season where he came up a little bit, right? Like, I don't want to pretend as though he's never done anything. He wasn't so bad in that game against the Saints. But that offense isn't even really asking him to do anything, right? Like, it's not like it's asking him to make these super complex reads with 5 dudes out in the pattern and figure out where to go. No, this is so much of the Kyle Shanahan smoke and mirrors and motion and misdirection and everything else. To next thing you know, you're Jimmy Garoppolo, you look up, and George Kittle, the only guy you had to look at on the route, is running all by himself up the opposite sideline because he ran some crazy misdirection play that had him go all the way from the other side of the formation with 3 tight ends, and now he's out there by himself. There are apparently lots of people who are able to do this. And by the way, looking at how this offense is humming now, I now have a much better understanding for why it is that Kyle Shanahan was so damn frustrated with Robert Griffin. Kyle out here like, bruh, do you see how open I be out here getting these dudes? Why are you checking it down again? These cats are butt naked open. Wide open. Who knows? Maybe they wasn't that wide open in Washington, but I gotta be like, yeah, I can see, yeah, see why you had beef. Like, I don't really appreciate the way y'all handled that situation, but yeah, no. See, I see why you got beef. So let's see, man. We got a Super Bowl next week. This is going to be, I'm really looking forward to the game. Great offense, great defense, a lot of compelling stuff. Everything going on, man. I tell you this, though. Shout out to all you Falcons fans. Because if the 49ers get out to a big lead and then they run out the clock running the ball, they going to be on Twitter mad. Like, oh, glad you learned your lesson with us, Kyle. Thanks. Way to go.
What do you think about all the nepotism stuff going on around Kyle Shanahan?
I mean, it's true. He just happens to be good at his job. Think about it this way. My parents are college professors. I went to a school where my father worked. And look, man, I did everything I could to lay low and not have people know my daddy worked at that school and everything else. But it was no point, man. Everybody knew who I was as I was walking around. And yo, man, it came in handy in ways where I could like go into offices and get my business handled. I need a form signed or something like that. I could basically skip the line. Like, you know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. And there are probably some times when, you know, I probably wasn't doing what I was supposed to do and I was able to like get through a little bit because people knew people or whatever it was. I was absolutely, positively affected by nepotism. No question. It don't mean I'm not who I am, right? It doesn't mean that whatever talents I possess didn't exist. None of those things are the case. That's not what it is. But I definitely derived advantages from people knowing who my parents were. There's no question about that. And that's the same thing for Kyle Shanahan. Kyle Shanahan is probably not an offensive coordinator at the age of 28 if he's not Mike Shanahan's son, right? He definitely benefited, I would think, from the advantages of being able to be around an NFL team as a child. Like, you think that was the big, like, I remember when I went to college, everybody on campus, like, I understand it better now looking back at it. But I underestimated, like, how terrifying going to college was for people. And they're so far away from home for the first time. They don't know how the system works. Like, I need to do this. I need to do that. I need to talk to this person. I need to talk to that person. They ain't know none of that stuff, right? Like, this is all brand new to them. They got to try to take care of these things for themselves for the first time. Dude, I grew up on a college campus. I knew how to do all that stuff. I had a much better understanding of the expectations and everything else because I got to see it with my own eyes. I got to, like, experience it from the inside. And it made my freshman year so much easier just by having that level of exposure. And that's what Kyle Shanahan had. He had that level of exposure. It doesn't mean he's not talented, but you can acknowledge that you had a leg up in that situation. Did you hear Joe Buck? During the broadcast, Joe Buck was like, oh, you know, I know the difficulty that comes from, you know, being this person's son and people knowing your last name. Do you hear him say that?
Yes, I did, which is why I wanted to bring it up and hear you.
Yeah, and I imagine that somewhere along the way, somebody poked at him and was like, bro, what are you doing? He was like, well, you know, the benefits outweigh the hassles. And look, he's right about that part, too. There are some, like, there's pressure that comes from being that person's son, daughter, whatever it happens to be. Like, I was in a PhD program in economics. I flunked out of it. My mother's a PhD in economics. I was absolutely concerned about whether this would seem embarrassing to her that this has happened. This son of hers, everybody said, was so damn smart, and then he didn't even finish that program. Man, yeah, I didn't want to embarrass her. Like, and that's the thing that a lot of people don't have to be concerned about. And you have people who are going to shade you. Because they look at you, I didn't really have this part, but I imagine for Shanahan, you got people that shade you because they're like, yeah, you here because of your last name. Like, all that stuff. It's a hassle, but it's the trade you make every single time. So, yeah, you can acknowledge that Kyle Shanahan was a beneficiary of nepotism while also acknowledging that Kyle Shanahan is really, 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 really good at his job. Those two things can be true at once.
Last thing on this. It's interesting because you have Pat Mahomes sitting on the other side. A son of a baseball player.
Yes.
A son of a professional athlete. How do you think, because we always say nepotism when it's a son that gets an opportunity because his dad was a coach and then he becomes a coach. But a lot of the benefits that you describe, you know, of being around the game, that sort of thing, are the same for the sons of athletes.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's benefits to exposure. Now, the thing with Mahomes that's interesting, though, is let me look at when his dad retired. 2003. So, no, that's still some, you know, that's some time. That's some time there. You know, the big advantage that he got from his dad being there, money. I'd be curious to know what kind of private quarterback coaching and stuff like that that young Mahomes able to get, because your dad had that bread, baby, that bread. Yeah, man. I mean, look, there are advantages that other people have. The thing with the NFL is Kyle Shanahan. The thing about pointing out Kyle Shanahan is he is an individual example, but the issue is much, much larger. So it's not to blame him necessarily, but he's just a reminder, man. Them last names on them coaching staffs be familiar as hell. And by the way, on his coaching staffs, last thing I give you before we roll out, just to consider the idea of nepotism. One of his assistants is a dude named John Embry. John Embry used to be the head coach at Colorado. He's been a tight end coach around the NFL. He's an assistant head coach with the 49ers. John Embry's son, Taylor, is on the 49ers coaching staff as a quality control assistant. John Embry is also black. He getting his nepotism on, too. Just don't happen for us very much. You see what I'm saying? Hey, we'll be back in a minute to talk about Bronny James, but first, it's a new year. The perfect opportunity to take your business to the next level by hiring the right people. But finding qualified candidates can be challenging. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani makes it easy. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BOMANI. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, so was this yesterday this happened, Gabe? That young Bronny was playing in a high school game. His dad had gone there. Then his dad got on the plane and went to Boston so the Lakers could get the brakes beat off him by the Celtics. But anyway, young Bronny playing in a high school game, and somebody threw something at him? Why would you do that? And, like, on this team, and you correct me if I'm wrong here, Gabe, isn't he just a dude on the team?
Yeah, he's kind of a rotation player, six-man type, not exactly the star of the team. They got a squad.
Yeah, they got like a couple, at least 2 5-star guys. I think one of their players is the highest-rated undeclared player in the class. But he's just a dude on the team, to which I say, why are we there? Like in sum total, all of us, why are we here? What? Why are we looking at him? What? Like, and this is the part that hit me, and this is important. When I first started seeing highlights of Bronny, and I guess this is now like 3 years ago, I was amazed at his court vision. Like, that was the part that got me. Like, he had some elements to his game where I was like, man, I can't believe a kid this age is able to do these things. And then I stopped and I said to myself, yo, I don't really know what the top kids of this age range are truly capable of. And I think I told you about this, man. One of my buddies, how old is that boy now? That boy's like 11 years old now. I think he's 11 years old. Probably wearing like a size 12 shoe. He's not as tall as me, but he gonna pass me up very, 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 very soon. Dude, I be watching his little clips on his YouTube channel and on his Instagram. Hey, man, these kids are doing otherworldly things at these ages. Otherworldly things. They in a whole nother place these days in what it is that they are doing. And I bring that up because Bronny impressed me when I first saw him. But I'm not even sure that he's going to be like a top-notch NBA, like a super-duper recruit, right? Like, I'm not sure that this is going to end with him even being a top-10 recruit. Like, going to watch Bronny is not the same thing as it was to go watch LeBron in the early portion of his career. He's just, from what I can tell, he's just not that good. And it's fine. It's okay that he's not that good. It's unfair to expect somebody to be as good as LeBron James. I just... I don't know. There's something about the level of attention that we're giving kids as high school basketball players now that makes me uncomfortable. It makes me uncomfortable on a bunch of levels. Like, I think about it when we have like a high school clip and we see some kid get dunked on in high school, and then we put it on, you know, some of our television shows and stuff. And I'm like, damn, man, that kid that's getting dunked on just out here playing high school basketball. Like, this is not supposed to be consumed by the nation. This is really just supposed to be consumed by you and your friends, you know, and the people that's around you. It's not supposed to be that big. But here we are, because we're always looking for the next big thing. And Bronny is going to be the next guy that really, really, like, commands our attention in that way. But we at the point now where this kid just sitting on the bench and people going to throw stuff at him? Like, this is where we start talking about the nepotism and, like, what it is to have somebody's name. Like, being a broadcaster and your dad was Jack Buck, and now you're Joe Buck. And by the way, Joe Buck is really talented at what he does. I want to be clear about that. That Joe got to some places at an age that I don't think he'd ever be able to have gotten to if he was not Jack Buck's son. Like, not as early as he did, correct? But he also got there in large part because he's a really talented dude, in a similar way to where Kyle Shanahan is. But I do think it's rough if you're a LeBron James Jr. and people are thinking you're supposed to be as good as LeBron, and you're not there, and all you really trying to do is go out here and play high school basketball, and you got people throwing stuff at you, not because of anything about you, but everything to do with your father and just the idea of you. That's tough, man. And, like, I'm kind of curious, because we make LeBron, like, the dad of the year in a lot of ways. I'm curious to see how he navigates all this through the internet stuff. And have you seen Zuri got her little YouTube show?
I did not see that.
I have to say, it's really, really, really adorable. Really, really adorable. Like, she was doing something where she's cooking, and she's like, "Hi, my name's Zuri, and I'm here to cook, and here to help me is my friend Daddy." And then LeBron comes out. And LeBron's clearly not that interested in doing this. So he's like, "Oh, you make the peanut butter balls? Okay, cool, cool, cool." And then she goes and then she makes the stuff, right? Like, this is what it is. I was surprised to see that, because I thought that he would be more inclined to, like, try to, I thought he would be on the Michael Jordan model, where Michael really tried hard to shield his kids from all of this. LeBron seemed to be leaning in on it a little bit more in a way that I didn't, I guess maybe all this fame and scrutiny is just something that he's accustomed to, but I did not expect him to lean into this in the ways that he has. And I wish that young man good luck. And by the way, shout out to that middle boy. We don't ever hear nothing about him. The homie Bryce. Yeah, you know what? And Bryce might be the one that's doing it right. You know, Bryce is over there like, "Nah, man, I just be over here chilling." He's like, "I tell you who know who my daddy is. Girls at this school. That's all I need."
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bo, this first story comes from politics.
This is Christina Correga with ABC News. It's official. Prince Harry and Meghan Markle are no longer working members of the royal family. According to Buckingham Palace, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex will no longer receive public funds or travel on behalf of the Queen as they embark on the next chapter of their lives. Earlier this month, the couple announced their intentions to break away from the crown and split their time between the UK and North America. They're not the first members of the royal family to give up their HRH titles. Harry's cousins, the children of the Earl of Wessex, already made this decision. Harry and Meghan's arrangements that are slated to begin this spring include Prince Harry losing his military titles, and the couple agreed to pay back £2.4 million to taxpayers. The Queen gave her best wishes to Harry, Meghan, and Archie, who will always be known as the Sussexes.
I forgot they named that boy Archie. So here's my question. Are these people actually interesting? Like, separate from being royal people? Because I feel like now they're not royal, I don't know what's interesting about them. Like, I'm just curious. Like, the dynamic was interesting with them, like, with, yeah, but nah, like, now that I think about this, I'm like, I don't give a damn about these people at all. And I understand that some of y'all do. No shade to those of you who do. I want to be clear about that. But I don't give a damn about these people at all. I will say again, though, what my favorite thing is about this story is Meghan Markle got this do-nothing daddy. At least he appears to be a do-nothing daddy from what I can tell. She got this do-nothing daddy who every time something happens to them, always want to get on TV, right? She ain't even really got, like, I don't think she has, like, a real relationship with him, but he always want to get on TV. She had, do you remember when she had the cousin who tried to come up with their own weed strain, the Markle Sparkle?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. When the wedding come around, they're like, "Yo, I got this weed," right? And, you know, all these people around Meghan Markle doing that. And what I love about it is It's the white side that's been doing these ridiculous things. It is not us. All the racism that they have encountered and everything else in terms of her being black and dealing with that, okay, cool. But all the ridiculous things that have been happening surrounding her family, it has all been the white folks, which is your friendly reminder that we all got more in common than we think.
It's interesting that we're talking about nepotism throughout the show really as a theme for today, but you know, they're going independent of the royal family. They're having to pay back all this money. You know, oh, we're going to be financially independent, all that sort of thing. When we start our foundation, right? That's what like rich people do who are like the sons and daughters of rich folk when they don't know what to do with their lives. I'm going to start a foundation. All right. Well, how do you start a foundation? Well, you need money. How do you get money? You got to have connections. You got to know the right people. Well, how do you know the right people and make connections? Well, you got to be rich, right? Imagine the situation that they'd be in if he wasn't the prince.
Yeah. Think about that. Did you see that video of him talking to Bob Iger, trying to get Megan some voiceover work?
I did. Oh, man.
I love that the game is the same for everybody. Well, you know, she, hey, baby, come here. Yeah. He was just talking about voiceover work. Yeah. I told him you'd be doing that.
Oh boy. And now they're going to cost Canada a boatload, you know, cause they're, what about all the Secret Service and all the protection that they're going to have? Even if they're giving up their royal titles, can you imagine if something were to happen?
Canada's so happy to have them, I bet. I guess they're going to be in Toronto. I guess.
They're in Vancouver.
They're in Vancouver. Oh, yeah, I can see
Vancouver.
That. Yeah, I can see that. That one fits. They ain't doing the Canada.
I saw someone tweet out, like, I've never seen somebody so happy to move to Toronto. In the wintertime.
Yo, they must have been miserable over there. Like, in the end, this is still, like, the thing about being royal is you got to spend all your time up under your mother-in-law. Well, I guess not mother-in-law in this case. Apologies. But you understand what I mean. Your in-laws. Your granny-in-law. Nah, baby, we got to move. We need our own.
All right, this next story comes from science.
My name is Sarah Wild, and I am a freelance science journalist based in Johannesburg, South Africa. Technology has developed to the point that we can take incredibly accurate scans of human skeletons, so much so that you can see the small imperfections, where a bone broke, if you had a disease that can also show in your bones. And we also have the ability to store all of this information in large digital repositories and then to 3D print it. Now the question is, who should be allowed to access this data and how can we protect it? So if you were to go and study human remains, if you were to go to a skeletal collection at a university or a museum, you would have to get all these different kinds of clearance because we have very strict rules about who can do what with human remains. And it differs from country to country. When you put this information into a digital repository, suddenly it's less easy to police. I mean, if you don't want someone going to your skeletal collection, you can just say, you're not allowed into our skeletal collection. You're not allowed to do this research. And the reason this has become an issue and why I wrote this story was because in 2018, South African universities with international collaborators launched a project called Bakengse Africa. And this collaboration wants to digitize about 700 recent identified skeletons from university collections around the country. And this could be amazing for researchers. Often it's very difficult for researchers to get to museums or skeletal collections to work with skeletons in person. There are a lot of things you can't do to human skeletons. You can't cut them up. You can't destroy them if they're part of collections. Whereas if you're working with an image of it, you can do lots of really cool science with it, such as figuring out what dental implants should look like, creating databases to help identify unidentified bodies, and to even see how humans have evolved and changed over time. So there's lots of really cool things we can do with it. But once someone has this data, it's theirs. And as my one interviewee says, Erica LeBay, a professor of anthropology at the University of Pretoria, what's to stop someone from printing a human skull and selling it on eBay? Unfortunately, the story doesn't come up with any easy answers. And there are a number of projects around the world trying to come up with ways to ethically treat these digital repositories and engage with them. And that, as LeBay says, is what she's going to be doing for the next year, trying to figure out how we can ethically use digital repositories and how we can curb people stealing or misusing information about people's bodies when they're dead.
Yo, man, this is all so spooky. Like, I see all the, this is one of the few where I see all the promise and I'm like, yo, there's a lot of good things that could really be done here. I'm not quite sure I see, you know, what the issue is, but here's what I see the problem being, Gabe. You let me know what you think about this. Wait till they create an army of people out of these bones that they able to make. You can print them out on a computer and all this stuff like that. Basically, man, when the robots come to take us out, man, they going to take the best of the best of skeletons. And it's just going to be people with the greatest skeletons ever. And they coming to rush us.
But if they're creating robots to take over the world, they're not going to be using human bones. Because human bones are breakable. They're going to be using like titanium and stuff.
I'm saying when they come up with the undercovers, they start sneaking people in. Hadn't thought about that, had you? Yeah.
What's sad about this is like every time it seems like there's a scientific or technological like revolution where it's like, oh, this would be great, this would be awesome, like we're moving ahead, then it's like you realize all the caveats that come with something and all the negative mm-hmm. side effects of something, and then it's like, well, is it really even worth it?
Yeah. Hey, here's my thing is, how come the people thinking about the caveats ain't never the people making this stuff?
With tech companies and the companies that are making these advancements, they don't necessarily have ethicists.
Yeah. Well, I feel like they just also don't spend enough time around people. Like, they don't think about people stuff. All they think about is making stuff. Like, they spend all their time by themselves. They just think about making stuff, not people stuff.
All right. This last story, coincidentally, comes from tech.
My name is Kashmir Hill. I am a technology reporter at the New York Times. I published a story this weekend about a little company called Clearview AI that has made a truly astounding face recognition app. The company scraped the web of 3 billion photos from public websites like Facebook, Venmo, Instagram, YouTube, employment sites, educational sites, many, many places, and created a really accurate facial recognition algorithm such that you can take a photo of somebody and get a bunch of photos of them from online along with the links to those photos and where they appeared. They say it works 75% of the time. I actually saw it work when the founder took a photo of me and it pulled up photos I didn't even realize were online. At this point, the company is only selling the app to law enforcement, and there are actually over 600 law enforcement agencies that are already using the app, and we had no idea about it. I first heard about it in November, and when I started looking into it, the company had a website that wasn't accessible to the public, only to law enforcement, an address that was a few blocks from the New York Times office, and when I walked over, I discovered it didn't exist, and one employee that turned out to be a fake name used by the company's founder. No one from the company would call me back for the first month. It took a while to get the company to respond to me. So I started talking to police officers and later discovered that the company, knowing that I was reporting out the story, was monitoring any time my photo was uploaded to the app. And so I asked officers to, you know, upload my photo and let me know what the results were. And all those officers got calls from the company asking them, are you talking to the media? You shouldn't be talking to the media. This company that wanted to unmask us all didn't really want to show its face to the world. But eventually they started talking to me and I was able to publish this story. Investors and many police officers expect that we'll all have an app like this on our phones within the next 5 years, which means if you're in a restaurant and you're having a really sensitive conversation and somebody near you is interested, they could take your photo and then know who you are and connect that conversation to you, which I think is pretty frightening.
We're done. It's a wrap. I saw something in that story where they were like, yeah. Well, what if, like, now you walk into a hotel, and when you walk through the door, they immediately greet you by your name? I don't need that. Let me tell you my name. Can I do that, please? Gabe, it's a wrap.
It's going to be cancel Christmas on impersonators, too.
Well, it's cancel Christmas on getting away with anything. Let me tell you what it's about to be, though. Open season on people wearing masks. Like, what's about to happen? If all this stuff goes around like it doesn't, look, we see this happening in Hong Kong. This is the way that this is going to work. People are going to start wearing masks, and then they're going to make masks illegal. Like, that's the way, that's exactly, that this is the Daryl Morey stuff is going on. This is part of it, was that once they made the mask illegal, people were like, yo, man, it's because of the heavy level of surveillance that they got over here. And that's basically what it's about to be, man. Like, if you want to have some measure of privacy, whatever it is, except they got your phone anyway, so it's only helping you but so much. We're done. It's a wrap.
Yeah, because even in like a, you see in Asian countries, people will wear like a mask over their mouth.
Yeah.
To help from the smog. One interesting part of the story was that when she spent time with this company, they took a photo of her when she had her hand over her mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same as if she had a mask over her mouth and it still picked it up.
Yo, the other thing too, they're like, yeah, well, right now they only sell it to law enforcement. That's the people I don't want you to sell it to. That's the last people I want you selling it to. I'd much rather you just sell it to some person. You giving it to the law? Stop snitching. All right. Normally, this is the time where we do a social segment where we let you guys hit up the voicemail line and all of that stuff. But now, on the King Holiday, I kind of like to just talk about this with you a little bit, because I get incredibly infuriated every year by seeing all the cookie cutter quotes that people send out on the King Holiday. And it's just all basically like, love one another, you know, justice, you know, like all these, you know, it's very basic and whatever it is. And people, I guess they feel kind of obligated to do it on the King Holiday so they can show they got some level of being down with this. Now, I assume that part of why this happens is we have people who don't really have like a true and great familiarity with who Martin Luther King was and what he had done. But the other part of it is a willful misrepresentation in the aggregate of what King was, what he stood for, and what he represented. And I think I've talked about this on podcasts before, but I read this book called Catch a Fire by Timothy White about Bob Marley. It's widely considered to be like the definitive retelling of Bob's life. And you'll see it on the T-shirts and stuff very often. People refer to Bob as the Honorable Robert Nesta Marley, comma, O period, M period. OM is the Order of Merit. I think it's the third highest honor that you can receive from the Jamaican government. But White did some records requests and stuff and went in and found that a big part of why it was that Marley received that honor is that the government was trying to reshape its relationship with Marley and to show him as being a friend of the government, and thereby muting the more revolutionary aspects of his legacy. Like, that was what the plan was. And so my dad has always said, he'd been like, yeah, we don't need no holiday for King. We just don't go to work that day. Like, we gonna take the holiday. If we gotta take PTO, that's fine. But, you know, like we gonna take this. We don't need the government to do it. And if you go back and look at some of the discussion on the floor of the House and in these different places where King's birthday was brought forth as potentially being honored with a holiday, go look at some of the things that people said. Like, everybody's on board with it now. That wasn't the case then, and then is the early and mid-80s. Like, we're not really talking about that long ago. Guys that are still out here doing work in these streets, go look at what they had to say about the King Holiday at the time. Like, go check it out. When King was in opposition of the Vietnam War, King's, like, popularity in this country, his approval rating was something like 25%. You know, this isn't a dude that everybody loved when he was alive and then he got shot. And then people are like, oh, my God, how could somebody kill Martin Luther King? People said some awful and horrible things about him after he was, you know, after he had been killed. And you need to ask yourself, why is it that people would feel that way about this man who just got all these quotes out here about love? So the NBA last night did something I thought was interesting. They do T-shirts, you know, T-shirts for everything. But they did their T-shirts for the King Holiday. And the quote from the T-shirts this year was, "We cannot walk alone." And I thought that was a very inspired choice by the league. And I want to make sure that people hear the line about "we cannot walk alone" in the full context of the speech. And it comes from I Have a Dream, because I think this point is very important. And so King says, There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his citizenship rights. The whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundations of our nation until the bright days of justice emerge. And that is something that I must say to my people who stand on the worn threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must forever conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protest to degenerate into physical violence. Again and again, we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force. The marvelous new militancy which has engulfed the Negro community must not lead us to distrust all white people, for many of our brothers, as evidenced by their presence here today, have come to realize that their destiny is tied up with our destiny. They have come to realize that their freedom is inextricably bound to our freedom. We cannot walk alone. And as we walk, we must make the pledge that we shall always march ahead. We cannot turn back. There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of unspeakable horrors of police brutality. We can never be satisfied as long as our bodies, heavy with the fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the cities. We cannot be satisfied as long as the Negro's basic mobility is from a smaller ghetto to a larger one. We can never be satisfied as long as our children are stripped of their adulthood and robbed of their dignity by signs stating, "For whites only." The "we cannot walk alone" part is crucial because that is calling on white people to walk with us. Right. It's not simply enough, really, on these matters to just kind of stand and be like, "Hey, man, y'all need to treat them better." Nah. Are you down to walk with us in this as your fellow citizens, as your fellow Americans? Are you down to walk with? Are you willing to do that? Because what we see so often when it comes to these matters, like the Rooney Rule, is something that we talk about all the time. Them cats ain't down to walk with. Like, you put in a rule and be like, "All right, well, I've done my part." And then every year we get out here and we talk about the Rooney Rule and people just be like, "Man, that's messed up. They ain't never going to change." And then we come back around the next year. "Man, that's messed up. We ain't never going to change." And then we go around. But I ain't seen no real strong white voice yet stand up on that matter and be like beyond just, "Hey, this is kind of sort of wrong," demonstrate some willingness to fight. Other than the Cyrus Merry, who worked with Johnny Cochran on the lawsuit in the first place, who's doing that. Hey, man, bottom line is people listen to white folks. They don't really so much listen to me. It'd be hard as hell for me to get white folks to listen to me. I got to shake them with all the logic in the world and put it all the different ways. And then 3 years later, they'd be like, "Damn, he was right." But white folks listen to white folks. There's a credibility that whiteness gives you that a lot of people don't deserve, but they get it because they white and that's cool. This is all right. This is the game. And all I'm saying is you can use your credibility for something good because we can't walk alone. We can't. It's not how this works. It's not how anything is ever going to be done. And in the end, the saddest part about this is somebody like me has to do what King was doing there, trying to explain to people. We're not even really asking you to do for us. We're asking you to do for you. Like, you'll get a whole lot more benefits by opening up yourself, opening up your soul, opening up your world. You'll get a lot more benefits than you receive from kicking it like you do right now. Like with the NFL. Best thing that could happen to them was to actually treat the Rooney Rule with some measure of respect, because then they'd probably get better head coaches if they were willing to do that. That's right. But so many people out here ain't willing to do better for themselves because they're so concerned about the fact that it might do better for us. And that's sad. It really is. And that's the thing about King's message is, right? When King died, Stokely Carmichael said something very interesting. You know, and Stokely was like, "Hey, man, it's a shame. Basically, if y'all kill King, that was how he was phrasing it, was really y'all. He was like, "Look, if y'all kill King, there ain't no hope for the rest of us. Because he was the only one that loved y'all enough to think that you could be redeemed." Now, Stokely and his attitudes and the way he sees things is going to, you know, would have been harsh in that way, right? And I think that's a bit extreme in the phrasing, but the point remains. King's belief that things could get better came from a place of love for all and a belief that white people in this country were capable of better and wanted better and just kind of needed some help to get there, to free themselves from the racism that blackens their own hearts. That was the way that he saw it. And I think that's the biggest thing, right? You know, if you talk about King getting killed and why, and of course, once King started going to economics and stuff like that, that's when it got a little wonky for people like, "Oh, that's a bridge too far." But at the same time, I also think King hit people in a really interesting place, which is you treat him bad, that man looks at you and says, "I know you can do better. I know you can." And so what happens? Either A, you look at him and say, "No, I can't," which has got to really make you feel bad. B, say, "You know what? You're right. I can do better." And then keep on doing the same thing. Or three, "I can do better," and be moved to do something for real. But if you ain't any of those first two groups, I can't imagine how much it burns you up inside. And the damn shame about it is, you're the one that can do something about it. Instead, you're over here asking me and Dr. King for answers. I hope you take the King holiday seriously. And I mean that sincerely. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our sponsors, My Computer Career and ZipRecruiter. Also, thanks to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Christina Correga of ABC News. Check out her story on Prince Harry and Meghan Markle no longer being working members of the royal family. Thanks to Sarah Wild, a freelance science journalist. Check out her story on Slate.com on the ethical standards of printing up 3D bones. Yeah. And thanks to Kashmir Hill of the New York Times. Check out her story on a secretive company that might end privacy the way that we know it. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.